And as I mentioned, there'll be a new way to, I guess, label the sunscreens you might buy. And the Food and Drug Administration announced new labeling requirements yesterday. And it was recommended to get the answers to these questions that we speak with a Dr. Amy Derrick, board-certified dermatologist in Barrington at Derrick Dermatology, online at derrickdermatology.com. And Amy Derrick, great to have you on the program. How are you?
Good morning, Mike.
Do you have, I'm sure you know, I'm saying, do you know, back in the day, how we came to have the numbers on sunscreens that we have today?
Basically, the SPF is a measure of the amount of radiation from UVB light that is tolerated on the skin before you get a sunburn. So basically, it's a division of the amount of radiation required to burn divided by the amount of time with no sunscreen at all. So for example, if you burn in the sun after 10 minutes, and you have an SPF of 30, by multiplying these, it means that with an SPF of 30, you can be in the sun for 300 minutes. And so basically they took volunteers and put sunscreens in their arm and then exposed them to UV light and waited until they sunburned and then calculated the ratio.
And we never knew this? I had heard some story where it had to do with putting sunscreen on students or something, and then putting them in a pool or water to see how long it lasted. That's not the case?
I think there's more standardized testing, but I do think that there are volunteers who have participated in this, and there are requirements regarding the claims of waterproof and whether or not the sunscreen washes off immediately in water. But the sunscreen, the new sunscreen labeling from the FDA is seeking to make the claims of broad spectrum more standardized, because in the past, the labeling of sunscreens was essentially unregulated. And so now when you see something that says broad spectrum, it's going to have a specific meaning, which is that it protects against both UVA and UVB light.
UVB causes the sunburn.
UVB causes the sunburn, and UVA is also something that can cause burning, but it is more of an issue with premature aging and skin cancers, such as melanoma. And UVA is the light that's in the tanning beds, for example, and the long wavelength can cause deep damage.
So the UVA is the culprit when it comes to melanoma, and that's specifically what you get at a tanning bed?
The tanning bed has UVA light because it's less likely to burn. Both UVA and UVB can be implicated in skin cancer. It's just that the specific wavelength of light in a tanning bed is UVA. So anyway, you need to protect yourself against both, which is the problem, because in the current state of sunscreen labeling, you can say broad spectrum, and it doesn't really mean anything.
Yeah. And I'm sure it's an urban myth, but I've heard over the years, you know, once you get above an SPF of 15, they're all the same. I'd imagine no.
Well, I mean, I think that there's diminishing returns at higher numbers. An SPF of 15 protects you about 94% from the UV radiation. SPF of 30 is 97%, and SPF of 45 is 98%. So there is incremental benefit, but over a 30, it becomes, you know, a percent at a time.
If I have sunscreen on, it's an SPF of 15, let's say, and I'm out all day, so I do get a degree of tan, but I don't burn. That's because I would assume that it's blocking out ultraviolet B, UVB.
Right. If you are tanning, that means that some light is getting through, and so there is some damage that's happening. There was a study that someone put SPF 15 on one arm and SPF 30 on the other arm, and neither arm burned, but biopsy specimens from both arms revealed much more damage in the SPF 15 arm. And so the recommendation is usually just SPF 30, and the FDA is looking into limiting the claims. As you may have seen, there are SPF 100 and even more now on the market, and that's sometimes a little bit misleading to the consumer to think they get, you know, 100
right.
times more protection.
So when's the last time you got a good tan?
Myself? Goodness, I don't know. I kind of avoid the sun. I burn pretty easily.
Would most dermatologists, I mean, if you're at a convention of dermatologists, anybody sporting a good tan?
I think we've become fans of the spray tan. I think the spray tan is a good way of looking tan without having, you know, UV exposed damage to the cells of the skin. And, you know, they've gotten really nice formulations now. So in the past, it used to be that you'd have to walk around with orange skin, but now it's a nice light brown or even a darker brown if you wanted to appear more tan.
Okay. So when it comes to things being reconfigured, if there's something I've been using all along, it's worked just fine for me. I'll say it's a copper tone 15 or something. How will that label change? Will I know that I'm buying the same thing I used to buy?
Well, when you looked at your sunscreen, if you purchased it a year from now when the labeling measures go into effect, if it said broad spectrum, you know you'd get protection against UVA and UVB, and you would know that it had been tested in this standardized way so that you had some protection against skin cancer. Because currently, or in the future, the FDA is not going to allow you to make claims against skin cancer or aging if you don't comply with the regulations.
I'm one of those who has an allergy, and I can sometimes get a reaction to sun, typically on my forearm, where I tend to get it.
Yeah.
And then one time when I was out of sunscreen and my daughter was little, I used Copper Tone for Kids and got none of that. Is there an ingredient that might be in something for kids that isn't in one an adult would typically buy?
That's a great question, Mike. I think that the what you look for is a physical-only sunscreen with zinc or titanium dioxide, a mineral sunscreen, which means that the little metal flecks reflect the UV light off the skin and don't create a chemical reaction. Most of the elegant formulations of sunscreens that our drugstore have chemical sunscreens, which take the light, make a chemical reaction, and make heat. And so if you have sensitive skin or you're prone to flushing, you're going to find yourself unable to tolerate those types of sunscreens. So there's a bunch of new very elegant sunscreens that are available at the drugstore for the face and for the body that do not contain chemical sunscreens. So we're in a fortunate time to be able to use those products.
As a dermatologist, if I tried to make an appointment with you for today, how long before I got in? It seems like we don't have enough dermatologists.
If you called today, I think I'm down at Northwestern at a meeting today, so I'm not in the office. But
they'd say Dr. Derek is now taking appointments for mid-October.
we reserve special time for acute issues because people need to get in soon.
Yeah.
It just depends, I guess, on the person or the place.
I mean, is there a dearth of dermatologists? It seems like if you do want to make an appointment, they are often 4 and 5 months out.
Dermatology is certainly a subspecialty in high demand. We find that if you do regular skin cancer screenings, you decrease your you find melanomas more earlier. So it is a highly demanded specialty, and because we are the experts in diagnosing skin cancer, I think that people are trying to take advantage of these skin cancer screens, and so we have become in high demand.
I think if I became a doctor, I probably would have gone toward dermatology. I'm probably not called to the emergency room at 3 a.m. very often.
Although I was at the hospital late last night with an inpatient. the emergencies are infrequent, which is a nice thing. But the amount of benefit that you can do during the actual clinic day is tremendous. I mean, every day I find skin cancers on patients, and I'm able to educate the patients about sun safety.
Are those instances really up, in the past, I'll say 20 years? Because it seems like, again, the first half of my life, we didn't hear much about it.
Yeah, I think, and I don't know exactly the exact numbers, but in 2004, there was, 20,000 less cases of melanoma than in 2009 that have been reported. And the question is it just we're diagnosing them or the criterion has changed? But it looks like, tanning bed behavior, a lot of my teenage patients will do tanning beds. It's shocking. I used to look around and thought, why are all these tanning bed places around? But the answer is because everyone's going to them, and we have lots of patients going to tanning beds. And I think that's something that we really need to focus on, because being in the tanning bed at an early age increases your risk of melanoma by 75% and also makes you look older later. So, focusing on these girls.
When I was a kid, women would tan and they'd have that reflector, like a big thing they would hold under their chin.
Yeah.
So they made sure they got a tan up under their chin, like that was necessary or something. And they would lay out forever, it seemed like. I mean, did they all die?
It
not to laugh, but I mean, like, it seemed to me that people really worshipped the sun back then to a far greater degree than they do today.
Well, I always tell my patients who live on the chain of lakes and, on rivers who boat that they get the sun off of the out of the sky and also off the water, which is the same thing, the same principle as that reflecting light, probably more intense if you have a mirror next to your face. But there's a certain degree of, reflected light from water and snow that you get from these reflective surfaces. And so it just makes the UV exposure more intense.
All right. I have just one quick question or two from the crowd, then I'll let you go, I promise.
Sure.
My guest is Dr. Amy Derek, dermatologist. Has to do with the changing of labels on sunscreens. It's coming up. Shirley, Libertyville, what do you have?
Hi, Dr. Derek. Thank you. I'm looking at my last year's tube of sunblock, and everything seems to fit except its last year's tube of sunblock. How long is sunblock good?
Sunblock has a typical expiration date of 3 years, but we always say that if your sunscreen is lasting more than a season, you're just not using enough of it. Typically, people surely put on 20% of the sunscreen they actually need to get the SPF that's on the bottle. So I think you're probably safe to use it, but you might want to consider, going forward, maybe using a little bit more of it.
Are the sprays as effective as the liquid?
I think people love sprays because they're easy and they're not sticky. I tend to stay away from sprays a little bit because they do have the chemical sunscreen component for the most part, and you can get a rash from that. I tend to get a little bit rashy from those types of sunscreens.
Okay. And Aaron, real quick, then I'll let you go. In Buffalo Grove, Aaron, yes, what do you have?
My question was actually what you just asked, whether the spray was better or more effective than the lotion-type sunblock.
I think if you use the spray enough, you can get a coating that's sufficient to block the light. It's just sometimes when we use the spray, we're outside already, and we're just trying to do a quick spray like a bug spray. But you have to focus on actually getting it on all the parts that you're trying to cover. It's certainly something that's popular, and it's nice for the kids. There are new formulations for wet skin, like by Neutrogena, for example, that are a little bit more water resilient. And so I like the sprays. It's just if you have sensitive skin, I would avoid those.
Okay, thank you.
Aaron, there you go. All right, Dr. Amy Derrick, we'll have to run. Your web address is Derrick Dermatology, right?
DerrickDermatology.com. Well, I hope you have a nice summer, Mike, and have a sun-smart summer.
I will do that. I'll be sun-smart day after day. Thank you, Amy Derrick.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Take care. You betcha. And more to get to, 720 WGN.